And thank you, Amy Goodman, for another great show, one of our great shows here at Kauai Community Radio. And it is indeed top of the hour, and you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Moloa, and K284AL Haleiwa. Good afternoon.
When morning comes to Morven Town, the merchants roll their awnings down. The milk trucks make their morning rounds in morning Morgan Town.
And it is time for Health Talk. And this week's host is Dr. Michael Ancharski. And Health Talk is made possible by listeners like you, in partnership with these underwriters.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at HawaiiCompassionateCare.com. That's 808-854-6335 or online at HawaiiCompassionateCare.com.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all-natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, systems, and setups. In the Puhi Industrial Park, Lihue. Family-owned and operated, open Monday through Saturday. More information at 246-4769. That's 246-GROW and online at GardenIslandHydro.com.
Waipa Foundation presents the 5th Annual Kalo Festival, Sunday, December 7th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Waipa, just past Hanalei. A celebration of everything kalo for the whole family. Live music and hula, local artisans, fresh food with kalo, poi pounding, hands-on crafts, and the Queen's Challenge Kalo Contest. A water slide for the keiki, too. Information about pre-festival workshops, recipes, and art contests online at waipafoundation.org or by calling 826-9969. That's the Kalo Festival, Sunday, December 7th. Entry fees support the nonprofit Waipa Foundation.
Okay, and I also say that the views and opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent those of KKCR, its DJs, its staff, its board, its underwriters. Good afternoon, Dr. Michael Ancharski. And how are you doing today?
Doing great. What a beautiful day.
It sure is. One of those beautiful fall days.
Yeah, aloha to everyone.
Yeah. So before we start, let's have a little bio about yourself in case people forgot.
Well, I've been a naturopathic physician for over 35 years. I go way back to some of the old-time naturopathic doctors that were my teachers, Dr. Bastier and others. And I pretty much do a full range practice. I moved here from Arizona about 15 years ago and practice in Lihue 2 days a week and Kilauea 2 days a week, and pretty much see everything that walks in the door, everything from delivering some babies at home to treating cancers and serious illnesses, mostly from a preventive nutritional herbal type approach.
And you have a phone number, website, et cetera, if people
want to contact you? I need a website, but I don't have one. I'm a little bit low-tech, but I do have a phone number, 652-5217, and that'll get you information and appointments.
And we'll give out that number again later on, and we're asking no calls until later on in the show, so you can give out all your information. So
yeah, about
how
the
does
last,
that sound?
About the last 10, 15 minutes, we'll take some calls.
And what's our discussion today?
Well, we're going to cover a lot of ground. There should be something in here for everyone. A lot of times people don't understand the various blood tests that are ordered. And so what I thought I would do is go through the tests that are commonly ordered by both standard and alternative physicians, and then maybe give a little bit of natural treatments for especially borderline abnormalities and talk about things to look out for. So it's going to be kind of a hodgepodge of information, everything from liver and kidney problems to reasons for fatigue, etc. So there should be something in here that interests people.
All right.
So the first thing I usually do is, especially when a patient comes in and they have a long history of various problems and their complaints are not as easy to pinpoint in that they say they're tired or they don't quite feel themselves, they don't quite have the energy or the zest for life that they used to have, and that it seems like their life is getting more stressful and more complicated. So sometimes in this type of situation, there's obviously some exam and some questioning, but I'll think of some of the screening blood tests, and they can sometimes rule out certain problems, also find certain problems. And I'm going to go over what those common tests are and then what they point to. So the first one is a complete blood count. It's a fairly inexpensive test. It looks at your white count, which are your immune cells. It also looks at your red count, which are the red blood cells carry oxygen throughout the body. It looks at lymph cells, which is your, again, your immune system. And some of the things that we find commonly is an elevated eosinophil, or EOs. And those can point the way, they're not definitive, but they kind of point the way if you have a parasite or a major allergy. So if you have elevated eosinophils, that points us in a direction of perhaps checking for parasites or looking at allergic situations. Another test in this small, simple blood test is your red blood count, and that tells you if you're anemic or not, if you have enough cells to carry oxygen around. And there's no treatment, no matter how miraculous, that's going to give you energy if you are anemic. What you need to do is have enough red blood cells to have enough oxygen around your body. Oxygen is one of the main fuels that every cell needs. So if this does come back with a low red count, and then there's two other features, hemoglobin, hematocrit, which is like the cell and liquid portion of the red blood cell, basically the common run-of-the-mill anemia is you need to add a good absorbable iron. Most of the prescription irons are actually very constipating and they're just straight elemental iron, but you can get iron in various salts that are more highly absorbed, like iron gluconate is an example, or iron citrate. And then I use a product that I find quite good because a lot of the pregnant patients become anemic, and a lot of elderly people as well. And this one contains some iron. In addition, it has some what they call liquid liver fractions, which they take some organic New Zealand beef and they concentrate the liver, which actually has iron in the form that your body makes it into. So it bypasses the step where you have to take the iron and then make the heme molecule, and you're already eating the iron in a form that it's readily usable. So it's very important for anemic people to come back up to normal, and it makes a world of difference. If the lymphocytes are high, that sometimes points to a chronic infection, like say something like a chronic herpes or chronic gum disease. If the neutrophils are high, that's a current acute infection, like say a strep infection or something along those lines. The neutrophils are the first cells to come in when you have an infection in the body. And then the cells that come in a week or two later to kind of clean up are the lymphocytes. So that kind of tells you the difference between an acute or a chronic infection. So the blood count gives us quite a bit of information. And the next test we're going to talk about has a bunch of different names. It can be called a metabolic screen or a chem screen, metabolic panel. And it's a series of probably about 16 to 20 markers in your blood that measure different things, and that I'm going to concentrate on two things that I find very useful. One is kidney disease, and it's very important to pick up kidney disease in the very early stages because at that point it's still treatable before there's permanent damage. And some of the tests on the chem screen that talk about the kidney are your GFR, or glomerular filtration rate. That's the rate at which your kidney filters out waste materials. There's another test called the BUN, which is blood, urea, nitrogen. And the kidney's biggest job, the most waste that it deals with, is breakdown products of proteins. And that gives an idea sometimes. Excess protein can sometimes contribute to kidney problems. And one of the treatments for early stage kidney failure is lowering the protein amount. But some of the common protein waste products are well-known urea, which gives urine its odor. And another one is ammonia, just like the standard cleaning product. Your body, from the nitrogen that's in proteins, as your body removes those wastes, they have an acidic ammonia type nature. And those are very important to remove from the body, and that's one of the main jobs of the kidney. Kidney also helps you maintain water balance. And there's another substance, another breakdown product of protein called creatinine. And then, of course, the kidneys also help you regulate your salts, your sodium, potassium. So the main things when we start to see some of these parts of the chem screen going out of balance is to make sure the person has an adequate water intake. And sometimes we need to lower the amount of protein in the diet, especially if it's excessive. And, of course, we always look at alcohol intake, very important to lower or cut out the alcohol consumption for kidney problems. But there are three pretty miraculous herbs that I use in early stage kidney problems. And one of those is the chief one is called goldenrod or solidago. Very, very good. It comes from a long European tradition of use in kidney problems. The next one is dandelion leaf. Most of the dandelion products you see on the market are dandelion root, which is more of a liver treatment. But dandelion leaf has both diuretic properties and cleansing properties for the kidney. It helps move things through the kidney. It acts as a mild and pretty healthy diuretic. It spares potassium, unlike prescription diuretics. And then there's another herb that I think has the great name for dealing with the urinary tract. Just the name rolls off the tongue like it would be related to the urinary tract, and it's called Pipsissewa. Huh. And I've always liked that kind of a North American native herb that's used in low-level kidney problems. Of course, there's other types of kidney problems, stones, kidney infection that moves up from the bladder, and those are different issues with different treatments, but we're talking about when the kidney starts to become sluggish, no longer keeping up with filtering out waste. That's a very dangerous situation if it progresses and becomes more severe. Even at its more severe stage, people need to go on dialysis to have a machine do the work of their kidney. The other major group of things that are tested in this chem screen are their liver enzymes. There's about five individual tests for liver function, but the main one are the two main liver enzymes. And this, when these show really, really high level, that's like a liver toxicity, like a poisoning, or end-stage alcohol, or a common one is hepatitis, and there's various forms of hepatitis that are all very potentially worrisome. But when we see these liver enzymes go up on a small level, I've even seen them go up with people that use, say, someone a heavy workout every day, and they take a couple ibuprofen before the workout and a couple ibuprofen after the workout. That's sometimes enough to elevate liver enzymes. Other medicines can sometimes do that as well. So anybody that's on even prescription medicines, it's important to every now and then look at their liver enzymes. Then on top of that, if there's drug or alcohol use or abuse and a very, very poor diet or excess weight, any number of things, even diabetes, can lead to further liver damage. The good thing about the liver, more so than the kidney, it has a great capacity to heal itself and to restore function back to normal. A liver has to be pretty badly offended and pretty messed up over many, many years before it becomes hard to restore function. So that doesn't mean you should abuse it and then fix it and then abuse it again. That's a pattern that some people follow. But there's some key herbs that I really like on low-level liver enzyme showing some liver disease. And that's milk thistle. And I either use the freeze-dried or I use the actual seeds themselves. I try to get the seeds from that season. And the active medicine that's in the seed is preserved very well in the seed. So you can grind it with a coffee grinder and just put it in a smoothie or just take it in various ways. And the other one, dandelion root, we mentioned before when we talked about dandelion leaf. It's just a good general liver tonic, the dandelion root. And of the foods, there's a specific food that is very directly beneficial in liver problems, and that's beets. So beet greens, full-on beets, beet juice, all very good. And then a local product apparently seems to be good for most everything they look at with it, but some very good liver protection with turmeric as well, and that may be part of its action historically used in cancer and other types of problems. But very important to have a healthy kidney and a healthy liver, and that chem screen can kind of point you in that direction. There's some other tests, blood sugar, and some electrolytes, sodium, potassium, that come out in that test as well. And we're going to jump to thyroid. The common test that standard physicians screen thyroid with is just the TSH, which is the thyroid-stimulating hormone that's put out by your pituitary gland when it detects low levels of thyroid in your blood. So when it goes high, it means you're low in thyroid. And when that one comes back abnormal, they'll take a look at your T4 sometimes. And I think the better test, which is now becoming more accepted, is what's called free T4. And I always get also the free T3. Those are the two main thyroid hormones. And it's kind of important to know both. So if the TSH is abnormal, then you should get the free T4 and free T3. I go ahead and get all three of them anyway. Gives me a faster picture on what's going on. And then another test that you can sometimes order for thyroid is called the thyroid antibody screen. A certain number of people that become low thyroid become that way because their own body makes antibodies against their thyroid gland. It's one of those autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis or MS or various other autoimmune diseases seem to affect women more than men. In fact, thyroid disease itself affects women at a 10-to-1 rate over men, even though they have identical thyroid glands. So we know that there's possibly not only the autoimmune situation, which is more prevalent in women, but also that thyroid has an interplay with female hormones. And usually if you're just borderline low, I mean, not really in the absolute low thyroid range, sometimes you can supplement with iodine and tyrosine. Those are the two main ingredients your thyroid gland uses to make thyroid hormone. And there's various preparations of animal thyroid, which just the glandulars, they're called. Back in the day, when I was even first in school, many of those animal glandulars actually had active hormones, but the FDA has since taken all the active hormones. So nowadays, if you take, like, say, standard process adrenal gland or thyroid gland, you're not really getting much, if any, of the actual active hormones.
And kelp, what about kelp?
Kelp is a good source of iodine. I should have said that's actually a much safer way to take iodine, is in a seaweed type form. But if you are absolutely low thyroid, then my preference is using the animal thyroid, which has almost an identical ratio of T4 and T3 as human thyroid. And I find it to be better than the synthetic thyroid in most cases. About 80% of people do better on less medicine with animal thyroid. The other 20% are harder to regulate, and they do better on the synthetic. But they're both prescription items.
And what's the purpose of the thyroid?
Well, your thyroid gland is, you could consider it a real master gland in that it controls the absolute metabolic rate of every single cell in your body. So what we mean by metabolic rate is the rate at which that cell does its work or its job, and the rate at which it takes in nutrients like oxygen and food, and the rate at which it eliminates waste. So even just like a whole human body takes in food and air and eliminates, likewise every single cell in the body does that, and the rate at which it does that is controlled by thyroid. So if you are low in thyroid, there's no treatment, natural or otherwise, that's going to fix your situation until you bring your thyroid levels up to normal.
And do people get hyperthyroid as well?
It's a much more complicated situation. I would say out of the, I don't know what the exact percentage, but of the people with a thyroid problem, 90% have a low thyroid problem. High thyroid is much harder to control. Those are people that are losing weight. And sometimes low thyroid in a condition called Hashimoto's disease, which is an autoimmune thyroid disorder, they'll sometimes have a month or two or more of high thyroid leading up to the thyroid burning out and becoming low. High thyroid symptoms are actually pretty serious and usually send someone into the doctor. That's excessive sweating, energy, so much energy you can't sleep at night. You start to see the whites of the eyes in a person. Their eyes look like they're bugging out, kind of. And their metabolic rate is too high, so they're just burning up their body tissues.
It seems more common in animals that be hyperthyroid.
There are,
I found out because we have cats that are hyperthyroid.
Yeah, cats just on a non-natural diet tend to sometimes go hyperthyroid pretty quickly. It's a condition when people first get hyperthyroid, they think it's the greatest thing ever. They get twice as much work done. They don't need as much sleep. They just feel like, you know, super people. But
then their hearts just burst out of their chest.
Then it starts to become a problem. So that has to be fixed. That's more of an urgent medical situation. All right, moving away from thyroid, I'm going to talk about a test that I really like. It was actually invented by a naturopathic doctor, one of my teachers from Oregon. It's called a hemoglobin A1C. And what they found in monitoring people's blood sugars was that when you take a blood test for glucose, it tells you only what the glucose was at that very moment that it was tested. So it's like a window into that exact moment, what your blood sugar. But we know blood sugar fluctuates throughout the day. There's the older tests we used to do, like 6-hour glucose tolerance tests, where you would take some glucose and then test your sugars for the next few hours and see where they went. And that test is still there. But this A1C test actually takes a red blood cell and measures the amount of glucose inside of that cell. And red blood cells live about 120 days. They're one of the shortest turnover cells in the body. Like your brain, you have the same cells that you'll ever have with the day you're born. You get no more brain cells, which you got to take care of them. But other cells, like blood cells, your body turns them over every 120 days, so about 4 months. So 4 months from now, you have all new blood cells. Although it doesn't do them all at once, it staggers them, of course. So we found that by testing the blood sugar in a red blood cell, we could get more of an idea on what your sugars have been running over the last 3 to 4 months. So it's a good screening test for diabetics. And there's this whole realm that we're now finding on that test that's in between frank diabetes and normal. And what we call it is prediabetes or syndrome X. And it's when you're above 5.7, but you're not quite up to the 8, 9, 10 levels of diabetes. So when we see this early diabetes or prediabetes, that's a very important time to jump in, because you can still control with mild medicines and diet. And the main thing in the diet is just to cut out most of the junk and eat more fiber. But there's some specific herbs that really help with this syndrome X. Sometimes along with the abnormal hemoglobin A1C, you also see the triglycerides, a type of fat. in the blood tends to go very high as well in this syndrome X. And the herbs I use for low-level prediabetes are cinnamon, bitter melon. It's nice that a few of these are foods. Prickly pear. And the part of the prickly pear, you can eat the pad, which is helpful to a small degree, but to a large degree, if you eat the little tunas, those little
purple fruits.
They're
so delicious.
Yeah, and you get the spines
sweet,
out of them.
Sweet, sweet.
They're sweet, but they actually contain a type of sugar that's a long-chain sugar, so it doesn't zap you like the straight glucose or honey or more simple sugars. So prickly pear fruit, bitter melon, cinnamon, and then two other substances that I like quite a bit that are very important. One is chromium, and you can get a good amount of chromium in brewer's yeast. You can put brewer's yeast on popcorn, on rice dishes, etc. Or you can take a supplement that has chromium in it. And then another one is when your blood sugar is out of whack, what starts to happen is your blood cell or your cardiovascular arteries and veins can be affected. That's why people with diabetes have so much heart disease and they lose circulation to their feet and get amputated toes and have a whole number of issues. Something that helps prevent that damage is alpha-lipoic acid, which is it's an antioxidant, but it's unique compared to, like, say, vitamin C or vitamin E. Vitamin C is water-soluble, vitamin E is oil-soluble, but alpha-lipoic acid is both water and oil-soluble, so it gets into all the cells, very protective of your brain and nerve cells so that they're not damaged by these blood sugar changes. So you want to get your hemoglobin A1C tested, and you don't want it to be under 5.7.
And for those just tuning in, this week's guest is Michael Ancharski, and we're chatting about blood screening tests. So.
Yeah, again, hopefully this is not boring. I think it's kind of what I do when somebody comes in and they kind of just nebulously kind of feel bad and they don't know why, and I have to figure out, you know, why it is, and some of these tests kind of point you in the direction. And we know that most Americans are going to end up dying of heart disease, at least half, and then other things that even contribute to that are we have a rising rate of diabetes, especially bad on the island with native Hawaiians. And I dealt with the similar problem when I practiced in Tucson, Arizona, Native American populations, people that changed from a high-fiber, very local diet to a highly processed white rice, white bread, simple type foods that end up making your blood sugar more easily out of control.
So those half of the world who's going to die of heart disease, can they be helped out?
Oh yeah, I think one of the things about heart disease that is more and more exciting, even though it becomes more and more prevalent, such things as obesity becoming more prevalent, but about 20 years ago, a few pioneers in the dietary research looking at heart disease and damage within the blood vessels, the coronary arteries, etc., or these plaques were building up, they actually found that you could reverse plaques. We used to think once you had a plaque, it was kind of there forever, and you had to have surgery, or you had to have it fixed, and you could never change it. But we now know, even a very famous example is Bill Clinton, who's had he's had open heart,
yes,
and various he's been saved from heart attacks many times, but he went on a something that we used to call a Pritikin diet, which is a very low fat, low protein, high carbohydrates, you know, mostly vegetables, and ended up really improving his health and has been able to go on in life, and he was a situation that was very dire not too long ago.
He has to be strong now with his wife and their new road, huh?
You never know.
You never know.
Down the road. Anyway, the one of the best tests for heart screening, and it has some drawbacks, but it's still a good basic thing is called the cholesterol panel or a lipid panel. And it looks at the major fats in your bloodstream. There's the total cholesterol is one thing it measures. Then it measures the good cholesterol, the high-density HDL lipoproteins, and then the LDL, which is the bad cholesterol. You can kind of think of the bad cholesterol as these really small molecules that have spikes on them. And as they go through your bloodstream, if there's a whole lot of them, they irritate and inflame the lining of your arteries. And where that inflammation happens, waste products build up, and they form plaques or blockages or narrowings of the artery. The HDL, which is the good cholesterol, they actually fit over the bad cholesterol kind of like a glove, and they block those spikes. They make them smooth so that they no longer give that damage. So if you have a fairly normal level of bad cholesterol and a good level of good cholesterol, then you have a lot of protection from heart disease. But if the bad cholesterol greatly outnumbers the good cholesterol, you've lost that protection. This lipid test also looks at triglycerides, which is actual animal fats in your blood. You can think of triglycerides as kind of like if you're cutting up a chicken, that yellow fat that's kind of greasy, that's exactly what triglycerides look like in your bloodstream. And it comes from eating too much butter, too much meat. You can even get a good amount of it from coconut oil, but they found that the other things in coconut oil seem to make it coconut oil very good food, which has kind of thrown our theories out the window a little bit. But it's mostly animal oils that give you the high triglycerides. Anyway, if your cholesterol has come, and then there's beyond this basic test, you can look this up, Google it, whatever. They have a more advanced lipid test called a VAP test, V-A-P. And it was developed by some of these research centers like Cleveland Heart Clinic and some other. And this is not just in the alternative world. This is kind of the new approaches within the cardiology world. And they look at, they break bad cholesterol down into even more fractions, and they found that some don't, even if you have a lot of one fraction, which means you have a lot of bad cholesterol, you still won't have heart disease. But if you have a whole lot of some of the other fractions, you will have a very high predictable rate of heart disease. So this new VAP test kind of gives a little bit more intense look at the different fats in your blood. And it's just now starting to be ordered by some doctors. Anyway, what can be done for high cholesterol? Well, one of the biggest prescriptions out there is most every doctor wants to put you on statins, which do bring down cholesterol. They also bring down some of the cholesterol that you need for healthy functions in the body, like making your hormones. And there's some indication that some of the newer high-potency statins, they now have a warning for pregnant women not to take, and some people think elderly women as well. But I'm starting to think that the preliminary evidence is that statin use over a long period of time starts to throw your blood sugar balance out of whack. So that's one issue with statins that's a little worrisome. The other issue is that, you know, like my big brother, his doctor told him, he said, well, you can fix your cholesterol if you change your diet, but if you don't think you're going to change your diet, you better take a statin. And so my brother said, well, I don't think I can change my diet, because he likes certain things. So, you know, went on a statin. But so it shouldn't be that because you take that medicine, then you can continue to eat a very bad diet or a very unhealthy diet. So it buys false security that you can take a statin and then still eat a high-fat, crappy diet. Anyway, so that's one issue with statins. They also, when they did the research on statins, they found that one thing that happened when you took statins is it lowered the amount of the CoQ10 in your body. And CoQ10 is something that is involved with cellular energy. The mitochondria in your cells is like the energy powerhouse of each cell. And CoQ10 enhances the activity or increases the amount of power in those power units. And they found that statins lowered your CoQ10 dramatically. And we know that almost every heart condition, from congestive heart failure to arrhythmias to heart attacks to high cholesterol to hypertension, about 10 different of the common heart conditions are all improved when you add CoQ10, and they're all make you more susceptible if you don't have much CoQ10. So very important, especially if you're on statin, but even if you're not on a statin and you have any worry of heart disease in your family, I think anybody over 50, maybe even over 40, should be on at least 100 milligrams of CoQ10.
And what is CoQ10? It sounds very chemical.
Well, they're about to call it an essential vitamin, but it hasn't been declared that yet. Normally, your body makes some from the diet. And there is a form of it that's actually a lot more absorbable called ubiquinol. So CoQ10 is normally, the chemical name for it is ubiquinone. But if you get it in the ubiquinol form, some people don't convert ubiquinone to ubiquinol. Ubiquinol is the more active form. So you can now buy supplements that are ubiquinol. But I would say you should be on that. There's a couple substances that lower cholesterol nicely. The research isn't perfect yet, and some people don't tolerate it well, but there's two substances, one called red rice yeast, and they actually found that it is a kind of a minor food, like a brewer's yeast type food in nature, and one of the part of the makeup of this is a molecule that looks exactly like statins. In fact, they feel that the statin research used that molecule as their building block to make statins. So it has what we can kind of call a naturally occurring statin in it. And the very first statin that was made, I think it was called lovastatin, and it's almost identical to the statin that's in red rice yeast, but it's a much smaller amount. But we've seen that it still can offer protection. And another is B3 or niacin. And part of the problem with niacin is that it causes a horrible flushing that most people don't tolerate very well. But they do have some slow release forms of niacin. I actually saw one in Costco. And those offer some protection. They're not quite as consistent or as strong as statins, but sometimes it's a good replacement if you can also make dietary changes. So very important to prevent heart disease and at least get a lipid panel and see where your cholesterol levels are. And you can control those quite a bit with diet. Just changing the fat intake, the fried foods, using fatty cooking oils. Some of those things you can adjust in your diet that have big results. Men should also get a PSA every now and again. That's an antigen that is put out when your prostate is starting to have abnormality. And up to a certain level, like normal is anything under 3 or 4. And then most, when you start to see 9, 10 or higher, that usually indicates prostate cancer. So there's a range in between where your prostate is starting to function abnormally. And the symptoms of that are generally where you can't avoid your bladder. You can't empty all your urine well, or you're up at night 3 or 4 times to pee. That's a sign that you should have your prostate checked out. The PSA is only a screening blood test, and it should be coupled with a digital exam. Not the most pleasant, or at least it's actually not a horrible exam to have. It's pretty quick. That's a rectal exam with the doctor's finger that feels your prostate gland and sees if it's enlarged. But that's a screening test for men. Of course, women have screening tests for female cancers that involve some imaging. That's another whole lecture, so I won't go into those. There's a few other tests that I think are good to get. When a female is in the perimenopausal years, there's something called FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, that's put out by her pituitary that's telling her ovaries It regulates the production of estrogen, so it's a way to tell when a woman's estrogen is naturally declining. So that's an FSH is a good test in that age group. There's a good test for vitamin D called the vitamin D hydroxy 25, and that gives you an indication of also in menopausal women of starting to look at osteoporosis and vitamin D levels. You would think we wouldn't have much vitamin D deficiency on the island here with all this sunshine, but we do tend to find still quite a number of patients that are vitamin D deficient. And now, whereas vitamin D was just thought of as just one of the regular vitamins that you just gave a small amount to in a multi, we now see that vitamin D is protective against two cancers that are very common, breast cancer and bowel cancer, and that it levels that are protective are much higher than we used to think. So vitamin D is kind of an in vogue or showing new promise.
And the difference between vitamin D2 and D3, is there a difference?
D3 is the form you generally get from animal products, and that's in a form that your body can already use. D2 is a form you get from vegetables, and it has to be activated by the sunlight on your skin. And some people are good activators and other people aren't. So D3 is considered the preferred form, but if somebody's an absolute vegetarian, they can use D2. I think D2 is what they generally put in milk to fortify it. But D3 looks, that's what's in like fish oil products, etc. So vitamin D is a good thing to test. Vitamin B12, if you're a vegetarian, sometimes looking at vitamin B12 levels, especially if there's a tendency towards depression or poor absorption of nutrients, vitamin B12. And there's some other tests, hormone tests. Many, especially women, want to look at hormone balance. And the best test to really look at your body hormones, including the adrenal hormones and all of the hormones in the body, they have some panels that involve collecting your urine for 24 hours and then sending it off to a lab in the mainland. And they look at all like the estrogen, progesterone, plus their breakdown products, and they can see ratios that favor breast cancer protection versus ratios that can contribute to out-of-balance hormone response. So sometimes a hormone evaluation, that's a specialty test. That's not a normal, just screening test. They have food allergy tests. The best ones that I've found are there's a few specialty labs where you draw some blood and you send it to them, and they actually look at the reaction of your immune cells in your blood to each of these foods. And some of the better ones combine. They don't just look at common foods, like for dairy, they'll look at goat milk, they'll look at yogurts, they'll look at 10 types of cheeses, as well as the casein and whey, which are the main proteins. So they look more refined in the grains. They not only have the basic wheat and barley and whatever, they have quinoa in there, they have all of the more people that already have moved in a more conscious diet, they actually look at those foods as well. So sometimes, especially with young kids with a lot of allergies, I like to look at that. But even before you run those more expensive food allergy tests, you can start by cutting out cow's dairy and a lot of too much processed grain. That usually improves about half of the allergic people without doing the fancy testing. But sometimes you find foods that, like, a kid will eat all the time, like peanuts, peanut butter, as being an offender, or soy. Parents want to give them more in the direction of vegetarian proteins. So many of the beans can cause allergies as well. And then there's heavy metal testing, probably the state of the art for looking at your mercury levels, which tend to be high on people that live in the islands. A lot of ahi consumption is called a challenge test. You actually take a medicine, and then it chelates those heavy metals into your urine, and then you measure their level in the urine. And so it's not only a treatment, but it's also an evaluation of what your levels of those things are. And we especially look at things like lead in people with senility. We look at mercury, headaches, and other types of low energy. Even aluminum, many people that lived at the time when there was a lot of aluminum exposure in cans and in paints and whatever.
And in cookware as well, huh?
Cookware as well, yes.
Yeah.
So, in terms of, these are common tests, and I've given some of the herbs that when you have low-level abnormalities, you can sometimes correct things. And I think it's good for a person at some point, maybe by middle age anyway, to have a full smattering of these tests. They tend to be usually covered by insurance, and they're not that expensive relative to what you can find out. And it can, like if your problem is fatigue or low energy, it can at least make sure that's not due to anemia, which is easily fixable with iron, or low thyroid, which is easily fixable with thyroid hormone. So it can kind of reassure you in certain directions and point the doctor and point your treatment, especially from a natural standpoint where you're going to maybe utilize some herbs and some dietary changes. It can really help point the way for those changes. So that's pretty much what I was going to talk about today. Hopefully it wasn't too boring.
Nope, it wasn't boring to me.
Okay, we can take some questions. And if
you have any questions, please give us a call, 826-7771, and toll-free 866-275-1112.
And there's probably some other tests that I don't find as useful that people want, some of the low-level parasite testing, some of the alkalinity testing. There's any number of tests that hair analysis for heavy metals that have been shown not to be as accurate and have a lot of false positives and false negatives as well. So there a lot of tests come along, and some of them promise more than they deliver. But these ones that I've talked about are pretty well standardly accepted, and they give us accurate information.
All right, we have a listener.
Good.
Hello, you're on the air.
Thank you, Dr. Muckle, for all this really important information. My question is concerning the excess copper and the danger, especially to men. Every day I have organic raw cacao and organic coffee. So I've been taking the chelated forms of magnesium. I was wondering if you care to comment on this.
Yeah, I think you're doing a couple of good things. You're doing some good things with the herbal approach, and then I think the magnesium is a good balancer of the other trace minerals. Some things to remember about copper is if you have excess, which was something I saw like in Arizona quite a bit with the mine tailings in the water, and people that use copper cookware, excess copper can lead to a lot of emotional and mental it can contribute to problems in that arena, as well as it can cause some toxicity in the liver. Most of the time, something I see a lot now, and I have to pay attention to, is that there's so many conditions that zinc is good for, like fighting infections, improving immune function. So zinc is kind of a darling among the trace minerals now, and it does have a lot of really valuable features in the immune system. But copper and zinc have a ratio that it's very important to keep it at that 10-to-1. So if you supplement, say, 30 milligrams of zinc, some people even go up to 100 a day, you have to at least have a few milligrams of copper. So most of the good multivitamins have about 2 or 3 milligrams of copper. You don't have to keep going up. So to keep that 10-to-1 ratio, you'd have to take 10 milligrams of copper for 100 milligrams of zinc, but you don't have to do that. As long as you have that 2 or 3 a day, it seems to balance out that effect, because too much zinc can drive people's copper way, way down. Well, and just like too much copper, too little copper can cause a lot of depression and some severe mental type thing.
My concern, which was activated by going to this website called AccuCell, which is sort of a technical website that basically the doctors have indicated that, especially for men, excess copper can be an extremely dangerous situation. Now, because I'm a total health nut, I eat all the organic nuts. That's one of my main sources of protein and minerals. Mm-hmm. So I have, like, of course, the pumpkin seeds and the sunflower seeds and a little bit of the Brazil nut. So I think I'm getting enough zinc, but I just to protect myself, I just have gone to this liquid form of chelated magnesium. And I think I just use a 1,000 milligrams as a rule of thumb that I want to take because I drink the coffee and I have a little bit of alcohol.
Yeah, I think that extra magnesium is good. You got to watch, even with the chelated, you get much above 500 unless your body gets used to it. You can get some pretty loose stools up in that range of magnesium. But the key thing with copper is just to have a little bit in your multi and not to be overexposed to it. If you really want to look, if you have toxicity of copper, you can actually take a blood level of copper, and you can also, it's one of the things, I believe, on the heavy metal test, that you, if you have excess copper, that comes back on that test as well. But I appreciate your call.
Thank you so much for sharing all this great information, Doctor.
All right.
All righty. Take care. All right. So
nobody else wants to call. Yeah, one thing I would encourage you, you know, a lot of times even your standard medical practitioner will order these tests, and then all you'll hear from their office is everything was normal, or, you know, I really find it important once these tests come back to actually sit down with the patient, go over each thing and look at trends, look at high normals, look at low normals. So even normal tests doesn't mean that it's not worth paying attention to.
Age and what?
So I really feel like when you get these various tests, and it's good to talk to your doctor about them beforehand, make sure they're including all the ones that are going to be valuable, and then to actually go over them, and then to keep a copy so that if you retest, say, a few years down the road, then you can compare changes that have happened, and it gives you just a little bit more information. There's a lot of windows that a doctor uses to see what's going on with you. One of them are lab tests, and I don't like those to predominate over the physical exam or listening to the patient, but they all give one little window into what's going on in the body, and so I do find that they're useful. And sometimes they're useful for patients that like to see where they're at now, like cholesterol, and then you do some changes in the diet, and then a year or two down the road you retest the cholesterol and they can see what effect they may have had on it. So those are motivating things for patients sometimes.
All right, we have another listener. Good afternoon, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, thank you so much for this program. I appreciate your time and wisdom. I have a question for you regarding methylation.
Uh-huh.
I've been going through a lot of testing and stuff for the past 4 years for a lot of extreme fatigue and things like that. And they ended up doing a genetic test for the 5-MTHFR, I believe it is.
Right.
And finding that I was positive for that on both my X and my Y chromosomes. And I think there were two things that they tested for under that, and it was, I had not the good one, or the defect in my genetics. I guess my question is, are most doctors able to follow this whole methylation process? If there's a problem with it, and how to supplement for it correctly?
Right, right. I think now that we've at least within the research community, they've broken down the genetic code, and they now can do, becoming more and more inexpensive to do various genetic looks. And it's kind of the whole principle behind, I don't know if you ever heard of the Eat Right for Your Type, the different diet types they had. But, and that probably related to some of these genetic things. I'm not up on what you're currently asking, although I have looked at the research on it, and I've dealt with some patients with various footprints of their genetic markers. But the main thing with methylization or methylation is that there's a number of detox pathways in your liver, and each one has a different combination of things that are necessary to move a waste product from its active form to its inactive form and then getting it out of the body so that it doesn't cause oxidative damage, etc. Or just even utilizing all of the proper nutrients from the food. And one of the big ones, one of the big methylating agents is the sulfur-containing foods like garlic and onion and kale. And some people utilize the sulfur-containing, like methionine, from those products that allow them to then process these wastes more efficiently, and other people don't do it as well. And it has to, a lot of detox has to do with having donors that you can attach to a bioactive molecule that's causing damage, and you can attach another piece, some other molecules to that product and make it less damaging and more easily to eliminate. And there's certain foods that are more high as methyl donors. There's foods that are higher in some of these detox pathways, but there are some people who don't have either the enzyme or they're deficient in being very efficient at that breakdown pathway. And those people, they still usually do pretty well, but sometimes we have to add particular things into the diet, usually more antioxidants. So I know that's a roundabout answer, and perhaps I can get back to you after the show in more detail. You can take my number.
I will, because we have run out of time, so I'll put you on hold and I'll get your number. Okay?
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Dr. Michael Ancharski, great having you again.
Oh, great to be here.
And what's your phone number again?
652-5217. And don't call me at least until I get back to my office.
All righty. Go well, Dr. Michael.
All right.
And
I appreciate
up next,
it.
My friend Richard, Ricky Ricardo, One World Radio, one of the great shows here at Kauai Community Radio.
When morning comes to Morgantown, the merchants roll their awnings down. The milk trucks make their morning rounds in morning Morgantown. We'll rise up early with the sun to ride the bus while everyone is yawning and the day is young. The more